AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
Debaixo da língua.
Olá. Yeah! Olá, olá. Sejam muito bem-vindos. Estão bem dispostos? Olá. Thank you so much for being here. First of all, vamos ouvir o genérico do programa ou não? Já não me lembro. Não vamos, já estamos on. Ok. Bom, sejam bem-vindos ao Debaixo da Língua. I'll switch to English in a minute. Sejam bem-vindos ao Debaixo da Língua. É um prazer estar aqui no Tribeca Lisboa. O Debaixo da Língua é um programa que tem 4 temporadas. Acabámos a nossa última temporada em agosto e tive o prazer de falar com pessoas extraordinárias, mas hoje tenho o prazer maior de todos, que é conversar com a extraordinária Edie Falco. So, this podcast episode will be in English. First of all, Edie, thank you so much for being here.
Happy to be here.
I am floored by your acceptance. Thank you so much, because you're such an incredible actor that I.
You got to get out more.
I know. I only stay inside and watch your films over and over again.
Sorry.
So just to explain to people that will listen to this podcast after we finish here, Edie Falco. Who is Edie Falco? She will tell me eventually, I hope. But just to give you a little bit of a. Context on Edie. Edie became the first actress to win an Emmy Award for Best Actress in both drama and comedy. Receiving the award for her performance in Nurse Jackie after previously winning for her portrayal of Carmela Soprano in The Sopranos. She has been nominated for a record 22 SAG Awards and is among a select few to receive an Emmy, a Golden Globe, a SAG Award in the same year for the same performance. Round of applause. Edie Falco, actor. Falco can now be seen on Mayor of Kingston, opposite Jeremy Renner, which has premiered already, I think, October, or is
it? Oh, premiered. Yeah. I think last week.
Yeah. And also, she appears in the feature role in James Cameron's blockbuster Avatar, The Way of Water. And, you know, we'll have so much to talk about. This is such a huge career, and I'm so glad to have you here.
I'm very happy to be here.
Edie Falco.
Yes, sir.
What do you think about your childhood?
What?
Let's go back. This is therapy.
No, wow. Okay.
What's the first sound that comes to mind when you think about your childhood?
When you're really going. You're gonna go really do this. Okay. for some reason, the first thing that comes to mind is when I was young and my parents were big fans of the Beatles, and I remember being very young, getting up in the middle of the night. And hearing the Beatles' White Album coming from the living room when my parents were slow dancing in the dark. Mm. And that was kind of a perfect snapshot of my family at that time in New York, not New York City, but in New York.
In New York.
Sound of the White Album.
Sound of the White Album. When I was listening to an interview you did a while ago with Alec Baldwin, this was 10 years ago now.
Okay.
And I think the podcast is called Here's the Thing.
That's right.
And you were talking about how your parents got married and divorced and then remarried.
Yeah.
And then remarried.
That's right.
So when you were growing up, how does that affect someone?
Well,
how do you
see
life
through that lens? I carried with me the credo, marriage doesn't work.
Okay.
Basically, because they tried and they tried again and they were interesting companions, my parents, but it didn't seem to fit under the guideline of a married couple. Mm-hmm. But they were, you know, ultimately very devoted to each other in some other way. Mm. So that might be part of the reason that marriage had never really been on my radar as something to aim for. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a lot of really good examples of that working well. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they loved and cherished each other for the vast majority of their lives. Hmm.
When you think about their story, and also they were artists.
Yeah.
Am I right?
They were frustrated artists. They both had artist personalities, artistic inclinations. My father, being an Italian guy from Brooklyn, you know, going into the arts is not, you know, strongly supported. And my mother thought you get married and have kids. Mm-hmm. She never really followed through on what she wanted to do. So, but they both, living today, I think they both probably would have had careers in the arts.
So yeah. when you were growing up, was being an actor a possibility, or was it preposterous?
Well, for me personally, it was preposterous. But my mom had a regular job during the day, and then at night, she would go and do community theater. Hmm. You know, her and all of her adult friends would go to this place and act out these scenes. It was insane to me and magical. So from my vantage point, she was an actress. And it never occurred to me that that was the only thing that she would ever do, but it was this thing she did as a hobby, which I guess on some level I thought was what I would do. Hmm. So I don't know how any of this happened the way it did.
Was it Sweeney Todd that showed you, maybe I can kill people on stage and get away
with
it?
No, but actually Sweeney Todd was the first time. I was in high school. It was a class trip. I remember the bus, and we all got out. And the way the show starts, if anyone has seen it, is that very, very piercingly loud whistle. Mm-hmm. And from that point on, I was mesmerized, and I thought, I don't know how this is going to happen, but I'm going to be spending a lot of my time in a place like this.
Do you think we know intuitively that some things are for us?
I think we are given clues all the time, and it has a lot to do with how much you are taught to pay attention to those cues, or if you're more used to ignoring them because they are troublesome and they are not convenient. Mm-hmm. But I do believe we're all, I think when you do something and you love it and you want to do more of it, chances are you should be doing something along those lines, unless that's drugs. Mm-hmm. I mean, career-wise, that tends to be, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Career-wise, I mean, if it's, you know, if you love to do math, you should probably do something with math.
Mm-hmm. You know? When you were watching Sweeney Todd,
yes,
you had a moment, the whistle or the screech was important and maybe awakened something in you.
Yeah.
But that, from that to go to acting, and then you trained, you then eventually started acting. Auditions were an easy place for you to be in?
Awful. I'm trying
some
to think
people thrive on those. They really like them. And I always feel like, what's your problem?
Good
what's,
God
what's
bless
happening
them.
With your brain?
No.
Because it
no.
really pains me.
I didn't really ever get much work from auditions. Some of the first things I did was movies for friends of mine who I'd gone to college with.
Okay.
They were filmmakers and they just used their friends. And those were the first bunch of things I did. Mm. People saw those movies and cast me based on those. And that is really the way things have gone for me mostly. Auditions were awful. I think a lot of actors might say this, that they rarely present their best selves in an audition.
And because they want it so much?
Well, that'll kill it right away. Like one of the things I auditioned for was Sopranos. First of all, I had a job already that I was happy about, a series that was actually paying my bills. I knew the character was Italian, but you know, American television tends not to be very creative, so they're going to cast an Italian-looking woman or someone who's played a lot of Italian people before. So I thought Marisa Tomei, Annabella Shora, sort of these dark-skinned, dark-haired women. So I went into the audition absolutely sure I wasn't going to get it, which is the way to walk
liberating.
Into an audition.
Liberating. They won't want me.
I had so much fun.
I'm
I was
fine.
Trying things because I knew it was all about just enjoying myself for that afternoon.
Okay.
So,
and what is a typical Sopranos audition? What happens?
Well, they gave
hold
me...
Hold a gun. Is that the...
How does that's it, right.
How does that work?
Exactly right.
That makes you hold a gun.
I had words to say. They gave me three scenes to do. And playing Tony in these auditions was Johnny Ventimiglia, who was the actor who ended up playing Artie Bucco, the guy who owned the chef at the espresso's wearing off, so bear with me for a second. At the restaurant. Yeah, so he was who I auditioned opposite. And I did the three scenes I had prepared, they were really fun, then they kind of got quiet for a minute, and they just threw me a script for another scene, which I wasn't prepared to do, which I was, at that, I was still completely enjoying myself, happy to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I left and got called the next day.
And you shot the pilot.
Then we shot the pilot.
And a year goes by.
And a year went by. And, you know, I, at that point also, I'd shot a bunch of pilots, and a year's go by and you never hear about it again. Then I got a call that they were, you know, going to pick up the show. And the call that I got was from David Chase, who created mm-hmm. the show. And because he's such an unusual man who I adore, he said, they picked up the pilot. Now we got to make more of these. He seemed, distressed about this. So, the first thing I did was look for a new apartment, because I knew from that paycheck I could get into a place that was a little bigger. And, you know, it's, you know, you're really flying by the seat of your pants in this business that I'm in.
When the success came with The Sopranos and then the awards and everyone's talking about it and saying it changed television, and what is it like? I read that you said that you had no idea while you were doing it at the beginning that things would shift dramatically.
Yeah. I don't think I'm very good at having my finger on the pulse of like anything. So I
so
have
Avatar,
done,
a film. Yeah, a film I just, that exists.
I never know what people will respond to. Like I had done a couple. All right, so there's Fargo, mm-hmm. you know, the movie Fargo, and now there's the Fargo series in America that's doing very well. I did a Fargo pilot where I played Marge Gunderson, the Fran McDormand part that years ago that I thought was like the best thing ever written, and just I thought that was my life from that point on. Nobody cared, nobody watched it. It never ended up even going to series. And I thought basically my career was over at that point. Basically what I learned since then is I have no idea. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what people will like. I don't know what will become a huge hit, what will just disappear. So I just do what I do and enjoy it while I'm doing it, and then let go of it. What was the question? I'm sorry.
The question was...
You did the pilot.
When you're in the middle of success, when you're in the middle of such an incredible... It's a culture shift in a way. You said that you're not good at knowing that it's going to happen.
Right.
But are you aware when you're like doing the scenes that this is electric? That this is something special that people will enjoy? Or I know that you had a lot of fun with your co-stars.
Yes.
And that was, you know...
Huge.
An incredible set to be in, I guess.
The only thing you can do while you're working is make your work enjoyable. If you're lucky, you have actors who are fun and who inspire you to really lose yourself in the story. Mm-hmm. I had all of that, and that's all I could bank on, because when the scene is over in the Yale cut, you go home, and then what happens from that point on is completely out of my hands. So the experience of making the show was thoroughly enjoyable. I mean, Jim Gandolfini was not only a great actor, we were very similar in that we didn't talk about a lot of acting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We were just like two kids.
You find that tedious to speak about acting?
It's not my MO.
Okay.
A lot of actors work very differently from
like
me.
Method like, and like, ugh.
I don't know how to do any of that stuff. And like people talk about research. I don't know. I don't know how to do that. I don't know what that is.
How do you go about it? Is it mysterious to you still?
Yes. It is completely mysterious, but I do know it's something. I know that there's something there. I know not to try too hard to get in there and figure it out, because all I do is mess up the works, you know what I mean? I know to try to remain open, and I know that as of this point in time, it has never let me down. Hmm. It's always been there. Something I'll say as an aside is that, you know, I used to drink, and I used to think that I needed to remain kind of a little bit on the edge of being sober in order to be able to do this thing that I did. And then I found out after getting sober 1,000 years ago that whatever it is that happens, whatever the conduit is to your inspiration, gets far more powerful once you clean yourself up.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lie to tell yourself you need to be fucked up in order to.
There is that myth. Why do you think that still lingers? Because it's been.
People want to drink.
People want to drink.
Yeah.
But there's like this, still to this day, some people. Actors are crazy. The good ones are crazy.
I know.
They're unhinged.
Yeah.
What do you make of that?
It's old. That's old school.
Isn't it?
And I do really think it is often an excuse for people who have a hard time putting down alcohol and drugs, to give them an excuse to continue to do that. And they could say, oh, I'm afraid to do it without that. Like, I wish I could remember where I read Gary Oldman wrote an article for a magazine many years ago when he got sober that he had dispelled with that rumor in himself and that he found it to be hogwash. Mm. That in fact he's so much better at what he's doing now that you have a clearer channel to whatever it is that you attach yourself to when you're working. Mm-hmm. And I just thought if they're gonna, you know, hear that kind of thing from anyone, it might as well be Gary Oldman, who we all love and respect, and you know, with Slow Horses now is on a whole new chapter of his career, which is very exciting.
So acting is mysterious.
Oh yeah, it is. I don't really know much about it. I really don't. I just know that I keep getting hired to do it, and I thank my lucky stars that I continue to work, and I know to just leave it alone. It just happens when you leave it alone.
You respect it very much, like the idea of it.
Yeah.
Because I feel
it's been so good to me. It has been so good to me. It has provided me with some of the most fulfilling experiences that I've ever had in my life. I am so grateful. Jobs I did as a kid, you know, when I was first starting out, I mean, some of the biggest, you know, spiritual experiences I've ever had have been as a result of getting out of the way of this thing that I get to do for a living. Mm-hmm. So I am nothing if not respectful and grateful that I've been, you know, I'm honored to be a part of this profession and very, very, very lucky.
It's a beautiful, I see it in a similar way because I feel it's such an honest, and it's very, you do very vulnerable, incredible characters and you're drawn, I don't know if you're drawn to them. Are you drawn to those very complicated, because I read something incredible about Edie the other day. I don't know if I'll make it justice right now, but I read that someone said that you were able of doing tragedy and comedy in the same breath, which is outstanding, which is I can't do it. But of course Edie can, in the sense that you can't access something that is maybe that precarious, which is humanity and that feeling of, is it alive or not? Mm-hmm. And how can I serve this?
All right.
So I was wondering if, are you compelled to like do those characters? Do they come to you? How does that work? Because Nurse Jackie is another one. You know, you've done several.
Yeah, well, it's a little bit difficult of a give and take, you know, like, I am drawn to those characters. And the more you are drawn to them, the more you tend to... It's almost like the algorithm on your phone. Like, after a while, those are the roles that start coming to you because they are the ones that interest me. Because, you know, why play somebody boring? Like, I'll get offered things sometimes, and something I find myself saying a lot is, anybody could play this. Anybody could play this role. So it doesn't really interest me all that much, you know. I want to do something that I know is going to be challenging and new and complicated, because I've been doing this a long time, and
I'm
still trying to mine stuff that I haven't had yet. Sometimes it scares me, but I think that's usually a good sign that it's something I should do.
Is it always on the page?
I think so. I mean, I can do almost any script easily, or I can do it in a more complicated way, which tends to be more what I want to do because I find it more interesting. Mm-hmm. But I think you can get away with almost anything, especially in television. You just move so fast. You're doing so many days, so many pages in a day. It would be very easy to just sort of power your way through the whole thing. But if you take a second and, you know, dig a little deeper, you can probably add another color to it, which is what I find most interesting.
Do those characters that are complicated and where you have to do comedy and tragedy in the same breath, do those characters have, like, a cost, a price? Is there a price? Because sometimes when I'm thinking, I'm, you know, a young actor, so I won't even go there.
Please.
But when you look at a script, I feel that some scenes, some characters, I have to pay a price to say that line, in the sense that character needs, there's a price to pay.
Right.
And I was wondering if for some reason, like some characters that have that price to pay for you, is that always a give and take? Like, does it take, I'm not like trying to mythologize it in any way, like, oh, it takes my rib while I'm acting. But it's not, some of those are quite dark, some of the characters you've played. How do you deal with the shadows?
Well, you know, despite the way it may seem, I'm actually pretty stable as a person. You know, and that is not, and it was hard won You know, I didn't start out this way. I come from some craziness, and I've been through a lot of my craziness, but I have put a lot of work in.
Enjoy.
And not mm-hmm. for my career, just for my life, from the day-to-dayness. If you want to work your way through stuff you've been through, it turns out it makes it very easy to do, easier to do the work that I do, because it doesn't, there is no price. You know, whatever it takes, it gives back in spades.
Mm.
I am not afraid of having anything taken from me anymore that I can't afford to give. I'm pretty well organized these days. You know, I've been in therapy since it was invented. You know, I've done all kinds 7, of workshops
years.
And 7,000 years of all kinds of self-help stuff. And it really has helped. And it's made my life better, but I know it's made my work better, and it's made my work so much more enjoyable. I don't worry about at the end of a workday going home and falling apart. Those days are over. I had those days, but they're over. They will not cost me anything that I can't afford to give at this point.
I opened this conversation talking about your numerous awards. You have so many. Do awards matter?
They are, what's the word? Oh gosh.
Nice to have.
It's nice to have. It's a terrible thing to say. I never know what I should and shouldn't say, but
no you can say anything.
It helps you negotiate your contract.
Which
if you
great.
Have more awards, you get more money.
Okay.
It's so they're good for
my
agents.
Do you feel
agents.
Like you're well paid today?
Oh my God, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I probably shouldn't say that either, but it's...
No, of course you should. I think
it's so stupid.
It's
the amount of money I get paid
money.
For
People
what I do is so stupid.
Mm.
You can cut some of this stuff,
no,
right?
No, I won't.
Okay.
All of it.
No, I mean... You know, I came from a family that didn't have a lot of money. I waited tables for 20 years. Literally, I would make the last dollar that I could pay for my, I mean, that's majority of my life was like
loans.
That. What's that?
You paid off your student loans.
I paid
loans.
Off my student loans when I made the pilot of Sopranos.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like there's that, and then there's this other place. There doesn't seem to be a lot of middle ground for actors. I mean, I guess there are actors who can support themselves comfortably, but I don't know, I'm still pinching myself, is what I'm saying. Mm. That, again, the big cloud of gratitude comes over my head. I don't know how I got so blessed, you know, to be in the situation I'm in, where I get to do this thing that I love, and I'm paid so handsomely, and I live a comfortable life, and my kids are in good schools. And I mean, it's just craziness.
Mm.
I shouldn't be doing this podcast right now. I'm very tired. Oh, no. I'll deny ever having said any of
yes.
these things.
Dubai Shalini never happened.
It. Yeah.
You talked about how, you know, how grateful you are. This is a very specific moment in time. I talked about that with Kim and Margarita earlier. And I heard you were here the other day saying that we need to be very vigilant, and we need to say how we feel about politically, how we feel and how we should go about things, because this is a very, very, very tense time. Being paid handsomely, being a figure people know, is it an obligation to be politically open and vocal?
It's so funny.
How do you negotiate that?
I feel many ways about that. I am no more qualified than any citizen of my country to talk about politics. I'm just a citizen of the United States. Because people may recognize my face, I'm being asked these questions. That does not make me qualified. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not a stupid person, but there are a lot of smart people who have far more to say about these things. But I think I might be a good person. It is certainly toward what I aim towards.
Mm-hmm.
I feel someplace between, I was listening to this talk you did earlier, what Kim said and what that other, the lovely actor
Margarita
said.
Marinho.
Yes, that you, those to whom much is given, much is expected, right?
Mm, yeah.
But there are things that I believe very, very, very strongly in. I'm a huge animal rights activist, and I do all kinds of work with PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Mm-hmm. And I'm asked to do all kinds of things with all kinds of groups, and that's where I put the majority of my energy, because I am, for whatever reason, deeply, deeply moved by these charities. I am mortified about what's going on in my country right now, politically, and I'm raising two children in this environment. Very complicated.
How does one cope?
there's good stuff going on too. And that's what I'm trying to look at, aim towards. I can't watch the news right now. I'm a news junkie. Mm-hmm. And at the election last year, I turned off CNN, and I have not turned it on since then. I've got to know what to feed myself in mm-hmm. order to get through the day. And I am reluctant to speak much about the politics of my country because it feels so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it has also turned me into a person that I don't want to nourish.
Yeah,
you know,
I understand.
There's so much anger,
violence,
vitriol.
Yeah.
That I don't think needs a lot of light on it right now, because she could come out very easily, but she doesn't do a lot of good, you know?
Do you think theater could help in any way?
Theater is the only thing that can help, as far as I'm
thank
concerned.
Thank God.
Theater, but not just theater. I mean the arts in
yeah.
general. It's our, as humans, it's our superpower.
Why do you think so?
Whatever it is that we connect to, all of us who are artists, know the moment where you realize it's no longer you, that you're connected to something other
mm-hmm.
that is quite a bit more powerful than our little human minds can come up with.
Mm-hmm.
That is the savior. The more time we spend under the influence of that, sharing that with an audience, I think the more healing will happen in our species. And it makes perfect sense that, you know, the government in my country right now is slashing all of the nourishment to the arts. It's almost like they know that that could be the way out of this hell that we're in right now. So, you know, all I can continue to do is go see little plays that my friends are doing,
mm-hmm.
go see concerts, you know, immerse myself in the beautiful things being created by artists everywhere. And continue to immerse myself in the arts in any way that I can, both as a participant and as an audience member. It is the way out, no doubt, for me, I think.
Do your kids give you hope?
No. I keep hoping they will, but
Friday, almost.
We're almost there. No, one's 17 and one's 20. So
okay.
they're getting, and unfortunately I've created this like, you know, liberal, leftist, you know, my son keeps going, did you hear what he said today? I'm like, I don't want to know. But, you know, he's become, you know, what I would, you know,
yeah.
what I trained him to become. But they, you know, they're young. They are young. I'm waiting for the cerebral, what is it, the frontal lobe
to
develop
yeah,
where
develop.
They start to, right, that's right, 25.
25.
I got 17-year-old and a 20-year-old, so I'm kind of biding my time. They are also two of my favorite people in the entire world, by the way. Imperfect as they are, that mother thing is for real.
Where do your biggest joys come from?
My kids.
Your kids.
My daughter is, she's a tough cookie, and, you know, neither of them are interested in what I do. And, you know, they're all going through there trying to find themselves stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And she just happened to send me a text, oh, by the way, I'm in the school play. And I was like, I really thought I was going to pass out from happiness. And then I immediately realized I had to temper my enthusiasm in my response to her. Oh, honey, that's great. You know, like, but... I think about my son when he was playing soccer, and he's always been an interesting, awkward kid, and I watched him, he got the ball once, and I saw him heading towards the goal, my little blonde kid, and everybody got, I realized, this kid is gonna make a goal. And I lost it. I made sounds I didn't think I was capable of. He didn't speak to me for weeks afterwards. But, I mean, watching my son, you know, make a goal is still, there are not levels of happiness like that in my life, you know. That, you know, we're built this way, to care like this about our children, I think.
Mm. Where do you lie to yourself?
Where do I lie to myself? That's a good question. I don't know. That's a good one. I may have to come back to that one.
Okay. Yeah. Next season, you'll come back.
Yeah, okay.
When we're talking about actors, and everyone watches so many things. I think during the pandemic, we had a clear, it was clear to everyone how we all needed stories to, you know, believe again.
Right.
We're going to exit our rooms one day. It's going to happen. We need to believe in it. And we were so drawn to the arts and, you know, artists in general. Everyone was like, yeah, I need that song and I need that film and I need that play. And suddenly it kind of shifted. because the rhythm has shifted so much that we lose track and the attention is up for grabs and, you know, the algorithm has us enslaved. So I was gonna ask you, do you think we'll have like a resurgence later? Because to have some hope, I think, to create some hope, maybe we need to, do we need stories?
Of course, yeah. Of course we do. I think it's how, from the earliest time, it's how we learned, just from having people tell us things that they know that we may not. And I mean, not only were there lots of things to watch during the pandemic, there were a lot of things that were created during mm-hmm. the pandemic that were so unique, like people working within the confines of not being able to leave their house, like Bo Burnham, mm-hmm. do people know who he is?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He did that, like he was making things inside like a box or something, or I may be conflating two different stories, but he was a person I became very, a little bit psychotically attached to during that time, who was creating art of his own design during that time that was just so hopeful and so exciting and so unique. I don't think, you know, until our last breath as humans, I think we will be telling stories. I mean, it is how it started. You know, I, like you were saying mm-hmm. earlier about theater. It's how it started, and it may be how it all ends. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're going through this thing now where I look online and everything is AI, where I no longer know. And that's the big gaslighting right now in the world. What is what's real? You know, what's real and what's bullshit, and why do they
Are
look so similar?
Are you afraid of it? Because I am.
I am. Oh, totally I am. I'm having feelings about, you know, a bear comes to get a little baby, and a dog comes and saves the baby, and
it says
on the
real?
Back, everything has been created by AI. I'm like, it's absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're sitting in an audience and there's a human right there in front of you on stage with another human, and they're telling you a story, we may end up right back where we started. Because mm-hmm. if it's right there in front of us, you have to believe it. I mean, there's nothing between us and the performance to confuse us. Anyway.
There's the root of the word obscene is from, you know, Greek tragedy. Some things are not to be seen on stage.
Mm.
So that's why it's called obscene. Yeah. And so some things were not portrayed in Greek tragedy. So now we see everything.
That's right.
Which I think is, you know, messing us up.
Yeah.
Totally.
Oh, for sure.
So I was going to ask you, do you think there are things that cannot be portrayed on stage, or is everything possible, in your opinion?
I don't know. I mean, I think we have been so changed by these phones, you know. First of all, I can't even sometimes watch a full Instagram video. If in the first 2 seconds the puppy isn't cute enough, I'm already scrolling to the next thing, you know. Like, we are being changed by the fact that, you know, we've seen, there's nothing you can't find how to do on YouTube and I think, I ultimately think that's not a good thing. And I think, like, I also know that my kids were seeing things, you know, at ages that were way too young for them to be ready mm-hmm. to see those things. And I think it is definitely, we are being skewed, in a way that I think isn't healthy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I know, I have a lot of thoughts about this, but this is also, it sounds a lot like my parents saying, you know, the kids with the rock and roll, you know, like, I don't know.
Their hips are moving too much.
Yeah. Maybe the kids will be fine, and mm-hmm. I'm just older. I don't really know. But there is part of me that's telling me this is dangerous. This is dangerous what's happening right now. You know, I can't fix it. I can decide what I will be a party to, but the culture is bigger than me, and I'm trying to find my place in it. I'm trying to decide what I will do, you know, as an actress that people will see. But beyond that, I'm kind of just watching to see, like, what is happening to our species, and are we going to make it through this?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Let's hope so.
Fingers crossed.
I'm going to ask for a microphone so that we can have a couple of questions from the audience.
Sure.
So, I don't know if there's a microphone ready. Algum microfone? Ah? That was, ali estava primeiro, ali ao fundo. Ali ao fundo daquela senhora de azul. Estava primeiro. Sorry. Da-na-na-na. And then I'm going to sing something just to... I'm joking.
Attend the Sweeney Todd.
Sweeney Todd. Okay.
Thank you.
Hi, what's your name?
My name's Ife. I'm a writer.
Hello.
And
hi.
Hello, Edie.
Hello.
So nice to see you.
Oh, thank you.
I'm thrilled to see you. I wanted to know, as a writer, I mean, good gracious, your work, some of the things that you do are so incredibly written. I was wondering if there is a process that you have when choosing your work. Have you turned down roles because they weren't written well? Can you kind of talk about if there's like a curation process with how you go about choosing your roles?
Well, the thing is, I know there's a curation process. I just have no idea what it is, mm-hmm. you know? It happens, the whole thing happens on an unconscious level. Like, I may read a script tomorrow and just feel like, no, there's not a way in heaven I'm doing that. And then a month later, I could read the same script and be like, oh, this is exactly what I'm looking for. It has everything to do with where I'm at. Is it something I've never done before? Is it something I did before and want to do again? But I think the writing, I mean, is a huge part of it. So many writers write like other writers, you know? And if you find a writer who writes like nothing you've ever seen before, it makes your whole body go, ah, oh, it's so nice. Also in terms of dialogue, if I'm reading it and I feel it kind of goes pretty easily, it sounds like someone might say that, I'm way more drawn to that. I used to think, you know, rather, what's the word? Yeah, whatever. Anyway, I used to think that I could take a script that was not well written and make it work. Just by force of will, or just if she says it like this. And then I realized I can't. If it's not there on the page, I can't fix it. And I am no longer, you know, trying to. I don't take that on as a challenge anymore. But if it sounds like something a person might say, I am way more likely to want to jump in and not feel like I have to, you know, be kind to the writer and say, what if she was to say it like this?
Yeah.
But it's always in the writing, always.
Mm. Next question from the audience. Aloha.
Hi, Edie.
Hello.
Hello.
My name is Helena.
Hello.
I am a film student, and I wanted to ask you, as you were talking about the industry nowadays and everything going on with media and social media, what advice do you have for people who want to get into the industry and want to, you know, become filmmakers and make these stories nowadays?
I think it's the same advice for anyone, maybe anyone, but certainly any artist that, gosh, when I was young, I was kind of a weird kid, I was awkward, I never quite felt like I fit in. I know everybody in the world has that same story. Only to find out all these years later, those were my superpowers. Mm. All those things that made me the weirdo, that didn't quite feel like other people, were what makes me the person that I am so enamored of now, you know? So if you are an artist and you are moved by a story, you just find a way to tell it. You don't let all that other shit, you know, tell you, well, you can't do this, or you shouldn't say that, or because of this. When I was first starting out, I took any script written in any form of media, you know, I was doing little scripts and big scripts and a play being done over here and a little movie being made here. Anything that where I could practice doing this thing that I loved. I think the integral part of it, it's got to be something that you love, something that moves you to continue. If that's what you're following, you will never be led astray, because that's why you were put here during this time, as opposed to someone else. If you allow yourself to believe in any kind of larger vision, the thing that makes you special and that makes you moved by this story is all the indication you need that just make the story happen, make it happen. What? Don't let anybody tell you you can't do it. I had a lot of people telling me, you know, oh my God, I went to audition when I was very young. I went to an office of a soap opera. And it was very early days. I gave them my picture, and looked at the picture, looked at me, and said, well, sometimes we actually do cast your type. What the hell does that mean? I mean, I've had some things said to me over the years you would not believe. But there were a lot of people who told me I couldn't do this.
Yeah.
They're all dead now. Just kidding.
was just going to let that sit.
I used my outside voice on that one, didn't I?
It's beautiful the way you've killed so many casting directors over the years.
I'm sure they were lovely people.
Do you think, has that shifted in your opinion? Or has Hollywood, as a concept, has it changed? You've had so many incredible roles when you were younger. Maybe that was not in your, I don't know, was that in the long run something you could see yourself doing? Were there stories that you knew about?
No, I never was.
Was it always Mother Courage?
No. I was never able to look ahead. I'm still not. Like, I have no idea what's happening next. I never had a plan. I have friends who are like, if this time next year, if I'm not doing this, I'm like, because I had, you know, whatever little ideas I had for myself were so minuscule in comparison to the things that have been brought my way, you know? By getting out of the way of plans that I have, I cannot believe the opportunities that have come to me by virtue of the fact of showing up in an open way in the world. Much, much bigger things are in store for me than if I had any ideas about it. I think perhaps Sopranos had something to do with like beginning to show the complicated people, good people who can also be bad, bad people who can also be good, where you're not really sure how you could be rooting for this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been really able to take advantage of a lot of characters like that are, you sort of feel bad about, you know, rooting for them.
This is not the age of nuance.
No,
is it?
Well, I think it might actually be because these people are complicated, much like every person I know
alive
and love.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think people want to see themselves up there. Because I don't know, does anybody really identify as an all good person or an all bad person? You want to see someone who's got a little bit of both, as many of us, most of us do, I think.
Mm. We're ending our conversation. It's almost. Do you want to ask a question? You can.
Yeah.
You can. Of course. We have 3 more minutes. I'm making that up. I think it's 2. But yeah.
Doesn't matter.
What's your name?
Mariana.
Sí. Hola, Mariana.
Hi. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
I already met you. That's why I'm so anxious.
Okay.
My question is, nowadays we see, well, for the past, I would say, at least 10 years or so, we've been seeing a lot of crossovers, like singers becoming actors,
radio presenters becoming actors.
Exactly.
It happens all the time.
Influencers.
It's awful the way it happens.
I know.
It's,
they think they can just walk
it's,
in.
It's, I know.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
They think they have free will.
That's awful.
Ridiculous. is there something that you would have, that you have curiosity of doing, either behind the camera or in another?
What a great question.
Another completely different art form, like painting or
being a gardener.
Exactly.
Yeah, I wish I could get into that gardening thing. It's not for me. I'm not interested in any of the behind the camera stuff. I love watching it. It doesn't quite interest me. I'm not interested in directing, really. I'm not interested in writing. I really so desperately love what I do. I want more of, you know, Nicole Kidman could stay home for a little while and let some of us, other people, get in there with no shade towards her. I'm sure she's lovely. But, you know, I want to be able to delve into all the different areas of the industry that I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I am at a point now where I have more to offer than I ever had, and I'm more accepting of all those parts of me that have always been there, but now I see them and sort of decide that it's okay to show people all that stuff. So now as I have more to offer, I wish that the amount of work that came towards me was, you know, analogous to that, which it isn't always. I love to sing. Not that I'm a great singer, but I love the idea of telling a story through song is so deeply moving to me. And I've had some minor opportunities to do that kind of thing. I think that would be fun.
Final question. I'm sorry, I need to wrap this up. Final question that I always ask on the podcast.
Oh, yes, go ahead.
Debaixo da língua means underneath your tongue.
Uh-huh.
What's under your tongue? So my question is, what is under your tongue?
What?
What do you hold back at this time in your life? Do you hold back things that you wish you'd be able to say? Are you always saying how you feel?
No. You know, I really, really don't want to hurt people if I can help it.
Mm.
I have a saying that people know. Say what you mean. Mean what you say. And don't say it mean.
Mm.
Has guided me through, I can't tell you for how many years, every interaction I've had, where I have a feeling, very strong feeling, I need to be able to get it to that person. I don't want to be unkind to them, because it never works. You never get what you want. But there are times when I'll just say, you know what, this is too, I don't want to manage this right now, so I'll make my needs take the back seat. Mm-hmm. But this is something I'm working on every day, every single day. I'm still like, you know, I'm going to have that hard conversation with that person. So, I mean, the need to be liked and the need to not hurt people still keeps me from saying my truth at times. Mm-hmm. But I'm not giving up till, you know, the fat lady sings, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Will we have a Nurse Jackie sequel? That's my last question.
I don't know. You know, they talked to me about it for years. They've been talking to me about
it. It's on IMDb, because I checked yesterday.
The show is?
Yes.
What do you mean?
Entitled Nurse Jackie sequel.
Oh, yeah.
And you're attached to it.
Well, it's, you know.
As a producer also.
Oh, great.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, I never know what's going on. This business is very complicated. This mm-hmm. one says yes, that one says no. It'll never happen. It's happening tomorrow. So the answer to that is I don't know.
Okay. Which
no
is
idea.
A great way to finish this conversation.
Thank you
so much.
Of course.
Edie Falco!
Thank you.
So good. Thank you so much. And now in Portuguese, muito obrigado a todos por terem ouvido e visto o Debaixo da Língua. Obrigado a todos. Espero que nos voltemos a encontrar. Obrigado a Tribeca pelo convite. Obrigado à Bauer por também ter estado comigo nesta quarta temporada do Debaixo da Língua. Obrigado. Continue a ver filmes. Keep watching Edie Falco and her amazing work. It's been
Obrigado.
A pleasure. Thank you so much. Obrigado.
Debaixo da língua.